Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, and we'll be glad to take them a little bit later. But right now we have with us online Pastor David Whitney, and we're going to be talking about the American Constitution. Now, to a lot of you, you may say, well, Constitution, you know, why is that important? Well, our Constitution is very important because it's what separates this country from any country in the world that has ever existed at the present or in past times. Because America was the first country where the founding people said, our freedoms come from God. They're not freedoms that are granted to us by the king or the dictator or by the legislature, but our freedoms come from God, and of course governments are instituted among men to protect our God-given rights. And then, of course, because our freedoms came from God and our laws were based upon God's law, and with the knowledge and understanding that man is inherently evil, and, of course, he can't be trusted to govern himself, how can he possibly govern others? We have to put limitations on the power of government. And so it was that the men who created this nation, first of all, had checks and balances between the legislative, judicial, and executive branches of government. And then, of course, they had checks and balances between the federal and the state government. And most power was maintained by the states. And then, of course, the states were restricted by the counties and by the local communities. And, of course, when we look at the federal government, what the leaders could do, what the legislature could do, was limited by the 10th Amendment and, of course, by the specific provisions laid out in Section 8 of Article 1. And the whole idea was to limit the power of government so people could be free. Now, they don't teach that in school anymore. They don't teach that in universities anymore. They don't teach the average individual that there were a republic under law, where the power of the government and of the courts is limited by the change of the Constitution. No, we're told over and over again we're a democracy, and that's a lie. We're not a democracy, we're a republican. So how do we then begin to get people to understand that they've been lied to all of their lives, and schools and churches, and by their people in the media, by the people at the universities? How do we get people to understand that even many of our leaders are lying to us by telling us we're a democracy when we were established as a republic? And that, of course, is what Pastor David Whitney is going to talk about tonight. David, thank you so much for being with us.
And I'm glad to be on the show tonight to share with your great listeners the hope, I believe, of returning our nation to the constitutional republic it was founded to be. And you're absolutely right. We need to educate people. We need to inform people about the true nature of what our founding fathers intended. And until they recognize that, they will go along, as you say, blindly with the kind of lies that we're being told by all of our leaders. Until they see the truth and discover that, they will not be upset enough to say, this is intolerable. We cannot allow these people to continue to run our nation. We need to put them out of power, and we need to put people into positions of power who are going to truly uphold the Constitution as it was originally written, as it was intended by our founding fathers. So I thank you for the opportunity to share with your listeners what we're doing here at Institute on the Constitution. People would like to know what difference they could make, because many people feel like, it's too late, we've gone too far as a nation, we can't turn around. I don't believe that. I believe there is hope, and the hope lies in educating the citizens of our nation and returning us to the principles upon which we're founded. And that's what we're doing at Institute on the Constitution. We've put together a course that involves 12 sessions, and each session involves a half-hour lecture given by Dr. John Eidsmo, a constitutional law professor at Faulkner University in Alabama, and he's a Christian and a solid expositor of the Christian heritage and the Christian history of our nation and the Christian foundation and theology behind the Constitution as well as the Declaration of Independence. And I've seen people, as they come to understand this, their eyes begin to pop open, and they begin to realize they're being lied to everywhere they turn. And then they really get invigorated to say, we have got to tell other people about this. We need to tell our friends. We need to gather a group of people at our church and inform them about this so we can turn this nation around. The hope is that as this grows, we'll be able to put people into positions of leadership in our nation who understand the Constitution as it was originally intended and who are going to only allow legislation to pass that is constitutional. Here in Maryland, with our class that began in the year 2000, we have seen one of the graduates of that class elected to delegate position in the state of Maryland, and it's amazing, just in his first term as freshman delegate, he has made an enormous impact, and now people are looking to him as to what the Constitution means. When they need to have a question about the Constitution answered, they're turning to him, this lowly freshman, because he has the answers, having studied it in our class, Institute on the Constitution.
Well, I think that the important thing is for people to understand that America was founded as a Christian republic. Now, you don't dare say that today. You'll be attacked by the New York Times and certainly Dan Rather and Barbara Walters and Tom Brokaw, and the entire media will attack you. And yet, of course, 100 years ago, everybody knew America was a Christian nation. So how did we get from everybody knowing we were a Christian nation to nobody knowing and nobody even being willing to say that America was founded by Christians, our laws are based in Christianity? You didn't have to be a Christian to be a good American, but you had to understand the Christian foundations and theology of the nation before you could be effective, because you had to understand that we were never to trust government. We were to limit its power, taking the chains off of the government, off of the people, and putting the chains on the legislators so they couldn't take away our freedom. Look how far we've come from that today. And, of course, this is the message that's really so exciting. When people begin to understand that they've been lied about this, they'll begin to understand they've been lied to about almost everything. And, in fact, many of us live in an entity almost like the story of the Truman Show. A young man who was raised in an idyllic island where all the houses had white picket fences and everybody was happy, and only it was a television set, and he was the star of the Truman Show. If you haven't seen Jim Carrey's portrayal, I think it's well worthwhile seeing and then applying it to exactly what's going on in America today. Well, David, now I know that you've established these all across the country. Many of our listeners tonight are up in the state of Washington, and they've had, I know, several successful institutes held up there. I know that a young man named Neil, I believe Davis, has had at least two programs, and they'll be starting a third one in the fall, and there have been others up there. Wasn't there one over in Coeur d'Alene and elsewhere?
Yes, and they're actually, I was talking with Neil Davis just a couple months ago here, and he's excited because he sees others who are expressing interest in the outlying areas of the state of Washington, and they have a real movement going on in that state that to them is exciting because, well, Washington is one of those states that's largely liberal because the majority of the population on the west coast there of the state has adopted the principles that are completely contrary to the Constitution. So they're doing a groundswell of change there, and I know that I think they had a class actually being conducted this summer up in the Spokane area as well. And in Hawaii, we have a class that's been going on, and I believe they're planning another class this fall that's going to be conducted. Basically, the class involves a lecture from Dr. John Eidsmo of a half hour, and the host who calls people together and organizes the class would then walk people through a series of questions to just reaffirm and solidify in their thinking what Dr. Eidsmo has been teaching them. And we've laid out in a notebook that we give as part of the host kit that the answers to each of those questions, so the host doesn't have to be an expert in the Constitution, just basically follow the directions. It's very simple, as you've said, kind of a turnkey operation. And as they lead the class through those question and answers and then some discussion questions, they're enabling people to really grasp what the Founding Fathers intended and grasp the sense in which the Founding Fathers rooted every decision they made about the structure of our government in Christian biblical principles. That's a thing that we've been lied to, that, you know, we've been lied to saying that our Founding Fathers were not Christians, they were deists or atheists, and that is a pack of lies that Dr. John Eidsmo does a very good job of dispelling all of that. And in addition to Eidsmo's lectures, throughout the series of the 12 sessions, we have also interspersed David Barton's excellent series, one of which dispels the entire myth of the wall of separation between church and state and shows how that's not what our Founding Fathers intended at all. As a matter of fact, the current interpretation of the court is the opposite of what our Founding Fathers intended.
And, of course, the thing is that without morality, you cannot have freedom. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was John Adams who said our way of form of government was made for moral and religious people who would not work for any other. If you either have moral people and limited government or immoral people, and then, of course, you have to have an authoritarian government, for, as William Pennant said so well, those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. And if people can rule themselves, then you don't need an all-powerful government. And people who rule themselves can take care of their neighbors and the local community. You don't need a government to feed the people and to provide medical care for the people. And nobody ever starved to death in America before we had big government. And, of course, nobody ever went without medical care. We had local county hospitals in every county in the United States. Today, a lot of people have difficulty finding a doctor. They have difficulty getting medical care. If you don't have money, you can get into the hospital and they'll hound you afterwards. But, of course, at one time, we had a system set up for the people who couldn't afford care. The people who could take care of themselves and provide their own medical care did, and the others were taken care of. And we had something called Christian charity. Oh, we don't have that now. Now we have entitlements. And you see, all of this is on the road to socialism and tyranny, because socialism is basically an elitist system, a reestablishment of feudal system as they had in Europe, where, of course, the feudal master took care of the serfs. And that's what this is all about, the destruction of the original American dream of men living free under God.
And, you know, it's interesting because the same thing has happened in the education system. We used to have a system of education that truly educated people in our country. That was before the government education system was instituted. We had private schools, and people say, oh, private schools wouldn't work because what about the poor people? Well, the same thing, Christian charity. The poor people were accepted into the private schools either at reduced tuition that they weren't having to pay the full cost, or sometimes taken care of altogether. But we had a higher degree of literacy in that era than we have known since that point in time. In other words, when government gets involved in these areas like education, an area that they are not designed by God to function in, they fail, and they fail miserably, and they do a far worse job than when the Christians are involved in each of these areas and are conducting basically what is the ministry that God has called people to do, whether in education or in medicine. And our Founding Fathers knew that education was critically important, but also that government on its own, without the church, could not effectively conduct education. They knew that the Bible had to be taught. As a matter of fact, people like to think of Thomas Jefferson as an anti-Christian or an atheist, which he definitely was not an Orthodox Christian. Be assured of that. He had some beliefs that were contrary, but he understood that the Bible needed to be taught to every student in school. As a matter of fact, when he was president of the United States, one of the printings that he had ordered conducted was the first printing in the U.S. of the government-printed Bible. And why did he want the government to print Bibles? So that every classroom in Washington, D.C., at that time the president was involved as the head of the school board in Washington, D.C., every school, every classroom in Washington, D.C. was to have two books, at least two books. One was the Bible, and the other was the hymnal, because he knew that children would not be good citizens if they did not study God's Word, if they did not learn God's truth, and did not have the moral principles of God's Word inculcated in them. To have citizens that were truly going to be developing the constitutional republic they designed, they had to be moral and godly people who upheld God's law in this land.
No question about that. And as far as Jefferson is concerned, Benjamin Franklin is concerned, but certainly as a younger man, I suspect that he was very much at odds with Christians. But, you know, as he grew older, I think he became closer and closer to Christianity. I'll never forget that speech he gave in the Constitutional Convention where he said, "I've lived a long time, sir, and the older I get, the more I convinced that I am of this fact, that God rules in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall without his knowledge, can a great republic be raised without his blessing?" Now, that certainly was not the words of a man who was anti-Christian in any respect, because that phrase, "a sparrow falling," was something that our Lord said.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I don't think he ever accepted the deity of Jesus Christ. But he realized, of course, that Christianity was the bedrock of our nation, and he certainly wanted people to read the Bible and to believe in it. And he really believed if people would practice the principles laid out in the Bible, then you could have the ideal society.
And, you know, when people speak about our founding fathers, most often they are maligned as evildoers, and the things that are emphasized as things like, "Oh, look, they held slaves," and so forth and so on. And the propaganda campaign, as you mentioned earlier, has been extremely successful. What we have had happen in our country is the truth about our nation has been lost because people have not gone back to read the Founding Fathers. People have not actually sat down and read the Constitution or read the Declaration of Independence. I understand that most schools in the United States of America today, a student can go through the entire a government school system and graduated 12th grade never having read even one phrase from the Declaration of Independence. And they don't want people to be reading and studying the Declaration of Independence because they will see the founding principles of our nation are so clearly rooted in the Bible. And when it speaks about all men are created, well, they don't want to talk about a creator. They say, "No, we're all evolved. There is no such thing as a creation. We're just come out of the primordial ooze, and therefore man is just a mistake, and as a mistake and an animal, he can basically do whatever he chooses because it doesn't matter. There is no right and wrong." And so that feeds very directly into the relativism that is also destroying our society. And so because people are not going back to the original sources, they are being lied to and they're listening to the lies. And what we're doing through Institute on the Constitution is taking people right back to our founding fathers and what they said and what they taught. You know, many people would feel that, "Oh, I can't explain to my neighbors or my friends or folks at church. I can't explain to them all of this that I'm beginning to learn as I study the founding fathers." And that's why the structure of Institute on the Constitution is so easy for anyone to pick up. It's a set of videos that contain 12 30-minute lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo, as well as the lectures, two videos containing the lectures by David Barton, and then a workbook, a notebook, that contains all the information they need to conduct and host an Institute on the Constitution in their community or church.
And what's the telephone number that people would call if they want to get more information?
Yes, they could call us at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068.
And the website is?
It's www.iotconline.com.
iotconline.com. Go
That's
there,
correct.
Get the information. And, of course, don't forget that telephone number. It's 410-760-9068. And
That's
we'll be
right.
back here in just a moment with you. And, of course, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and certainly we're talking about this program that's set up to begin to counter the organized effort of the wicked people to transform America. Now, you have to understand there really are people who don't believe in America. They believe in a ruling elite, and they want, of course, to withhold from the American people the truth that we've been talking about. They set out many years ago to accomplish just that. And, of course, these are the people who worked in the great tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation. And, of course, there was a report put out almost 50 years ago by the Reese Committee that was commissioned by the 83rd Congress to find out why the Rockefeller and Ford and Carnegie Foundations were financing communism at that time, and had financed the pro-Chinese communist organizations that called Mao Tse-tung an agrarian reformer, and did everything they could, of course, to demonize General Chiang Kai-shek. And it was that policy, financed in large part by the Rockefeller and Ford foundations, that led to America withdrawing support from the nationalist Chinese and bringing the communists to power. And so certainly the Congress wanted to know why this had happened, and they commissioned a study. And the great foundations found out that the Reese Committee found out the great foundations were financing communism and socialism, and had taken over control of our school books, of our educational system, of our universities, and they were undermining belief in America. And that was the most shocking book I ever read when I first read it some 40 years ago. It's still available. It's called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And this book transformed my life 40 years ago. I hope you'll get a copy and read it through. Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It's important that you know who began all of this. And, of course, these were people of great wealth. What did they want? Why, they wanted to rule the world. And they were going to use America and our wealth and our military power to accomplish that. And, of course, a generation, maybe two generations has gone by. But the same families are still there. The same families are still pushing the same goal. And, of course, their objective today is a one-world government and, of course, a new world religion, with the destruction of Christianity, because they have an intense hatred of Christianity, and replacing it with a different religion. And that's the basis of the new educational program that we see in No Child Left Behind. Little wonder that Ted Kennedy, the radical leftist, would support the program that was put forward by the current administration. And if you don't know about that, you need to get the book Fed Ed, or get our four-tape set on Fed Ed, and begin to understand it. So this idea of establishing institutes of the Constitution is certainly a unique idea, and it's an idea whose time has come if there are enough people who still treasure their freedom and our heritage to be willing to apply themselves and make the sacrifice of time. And it doesn't take a lot of time.
It doesn't.
So why don't you tell people how long it's going to take them every week to prepare for one of these programs?
What they basically need to do is listen to Dr. John Einsmo's lecture beforehand, which is a half-hour lecture, to be able to grasp overall what he is saying, so that when they conduct the discussion session afterwards, after the first half hour that people listen to Dr. John Einsmo, they will remember clearly what Einsmo is saying. That's all they need to do. If they have grasped the content of what he's saying, and like I said, in the notebook we lay out a detailed outline of his lecture so that basically you can follow along and take some notes to help retain point by point what he's saying. It's all laid out there for them. And if they don't have, or if they have questions, this is what many people fear. Oh, what if I have a question that...
Oh, wait, we're going to have to bring on another station here. We'll be right back.
Okay.
All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. We're talking about the Institute of the Constitution, and, of course, how you can set one of these things up in your local community. And, of course, you can actually, it doesn't take much time. You have to just spend 30 minutes listening to the program ahead of time. And then, of course, you're prepared when the guests come, and they're going to watch the same video. And then, of course, all the questions are really prepared for you, as well as the answers.
That's right. The answers are there in the notebook, so that as the host leads them through the questions, they have the answers right in front of them. And what many people fear is, well, what if one of my class members asks a question that I don't know the answer to? I'm not a constitutional expert. What would I do? Well, that's why we at the Institute on the Constitution invite them to call us or to go to our website, www.iotconline.com, and on the website, they can use the email function to email a question to us, and we can get back to them that way, or calling us on our hotline, 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068, in which they can either order a host kit or ask a question, and we'll get back to them because we want to help them with the resources we have to conduct a class that's going to be effective and it's going to answer the questions that may arise that they don't have an answer to. So if they have a half an hour of preparation time, and then of course they need to be there a little bit ahead of time, whether it's at church or whether they're using a community center or some other setting, we encourage them to be there half an hour early to be sure things are set up and the TV works and the video player runs correctly, and perhaps to have some refreshments prepared and all of that, and to greet people as they come in and get to know the members of their class. And then the class itself usually lasts about an hour and a half. Sometimes people want to hang around afterwards and talk and discuss ideas and discuss current events and how it relates to what they're learning, which is all very exciting as I've seen this take place. People get enthusiastic about the idea that I can teach other people what I am learning. You know, this is a grassroots effort. It doesn't involve a huge amount of time or resources. The cost of the kit, which we're not making anything on, is what it costs us to put it together, buy the videos, and to ship them out to people is $99. And actually, if they call us on the hotline, 410-760-9068, they can actually use a credit card to order that from us. But what we're doing is not a huge amount of effort on the part of the people. It doesn't take much time, but it can make a powerful difference. You see, what is arrayed, as you just shared, against us is these huge, powerful foundations with millions of dollars to spend, or perhaps billions of dollars to spend, but we in a small grassroots effort can defeat this Goliath with our slingshot. And that's kind of what the Institute on the Constitution is here. I was just reading about the opening of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, this past July 4th. It was opened with great fanfare and so forth, and I was curious about what they were teaching about the Constitution. So I spent a little time on their website, and I found that the president of the National Constitution Center, Joseph Torsella, if he is any measure of what that institution is about, it's on the wrong track altogether, because he stated earlier that the vision of the National Constitution Center there in Philadelphia was to aid, quote, the continuing experiment of constitutional democracy. Democracy? That's what our founding fathers wanted to avoid at all costs. But here this national organization with millions and millions of private as well as public money behind it is promoting national democracy as what our nation is all about. Just shows that everywhere you turn, the powers that be have succumbed to this agenda.
Well, I think I see up there that a man named Neil is going to be is calling in from
Great.
The state of Washington. And is this the Neil that I know?
I think so.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing
well, Neil.
Good to hear from you. And this is the gentleman, I believe, who put on the first program up there.
Yes.
Well, no.
Oh, no, this is a different Neil.
No, well, I think you're thinking of Monty,
this is different
Monty Benham.
This is not the deal that, this is not Neil Davis. So,
this
go
is
ahead.
A new deal.
What?
This is a new Neil.
This is a new Neil. Well, good. We're glad to have you with us, Neil.
But I was curious if the Pastor Whitney
right.
Is familiar. When Ronald Reagan first took office, he said that he would abolish the Department of Education. But what happened there, why he reneged on that promise?
All right, we'll have to get back to that in just a moment here. And do you want to hang on? Have we got a little break here? Do you mind hanging?
That's fine.
All right, fine. So, of course, we're going to have to go to a break, and then when we get back, we'll ask David. Of course, Ronald Reagan said he was going to abolish the Department of Education. He said he was going to cut back on big government. He said he was going to have a balanced budget. He said he was going to reduce taxes. Everybody remembers that and remembers the tax cut back in 1981, but of course they've forgotten the largest tax increase in history in 1986. It's amazing how we can selectively remember one thing and forget every other thing. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is, of course, Pastor David Whitney. And, of course, with us on the line is Neil. And Neil is asking our special guest, Pastor David Whitney, what about Ronald Reagan saying he was going to do away with the Department of Education and then not doing it? How would you respond to him?
I don't know the exact details, but I do know this, that anyone who comes to power in Washington, D.C., has an enormous amount of pressure put upon them to conform to the agenda, the agenda that's being pushed forward by all of those who do not want a constitutional republic, who want a one-world government, who want a slaveocracy, basically, where the few ruling a leader in power. And the education department is a huge piece of that. And the reason being is that wherever the money goes, there's power and influence connected to it. And so the power and influence has been taken regarding education in our country. The power and influence has been taken from the local school board that has any say, very little say now about what takes place in terms of the curriculum, and has been transferred to the federal government. So the federal government is telling the local school what it must teach and what it must do in very specific details in all levels of the education that takes place, or I should say the miseducation that takes place in the government schools, or they will no longer receive federal funds. They will be cut off. And those powers that be, I believe, got to Ronald Reagan and persuaded him that he could not do that, that he could not allow that education system to be abolished. And I believe he had full intention of doing so when elected to office. I could be wrong about that, but I believe the powers that be would not allow him to go forward with that agenda, because they realized what that would do is that would release the stranglehold that the federal government has upon the government schools. And it would release it, allow the local powers that be, in other words, the parents through the school boards, able to control what is being taught in the schools. And they would not permit that to take place, because that is the reverse of the agenda that they are proposing and pushing forward.
Well, I will tell you, Neil, when I went back to the White House and I went into the West Wing there, it was 1988, and I interviewed Gary Bauer, and he told me that President Reagan would give directives and, of course, his subordinates would do exactly the opposite. Basically, I was told another story by Colonel Edward Sleeper back about 1980-81, I guess it would have been 81 or so, 82, and, of course, he was with the American Defense Committee or Foundation, and he said that, of course, he had been told by Jerry Falwell that at the Republican convention there, leading up to Ronald Reagan's nomination to become the Republican nominee for the president, that Jerry Falwell and Phyllis Schlafly and two or three others had gone to see Ronald Reagan, and Jerry Falwell was the spokesman, and he said, "Governor, you're going to get the nomination for the presidency. There's no question." But, of course, who are you going to have as vice president? There are a lot of people here that would be very happy with. There'd be Jack Kemp. There would be Phil Crane. And he mentioned two or three others. He said the one man who is not acceptable to the Christians in this country is George Bush. That we want your word that you will not accept him as your vice president. And Jerry and Reagan said to him, "You have my word, Jerry." Well, then, of course, he had a weekend off. During that weekend, he spent it with Jerry Ford and Henry Kissinger. And on Monday, Ronald Reagan came back and announced that his vice president would be George Herbert Walker Bush. And Jerry Falwell went with the others to see him. And Jerry Falwell, according to the story, shook his finger at and said, "Governor, you lied to us. You lied to us." And Ronald Reagan said, "You don't understand, Jerry. I had no choice." Now, you have to understand that both Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger came from the Council on Foreign Relations, the people who really run both political parties, and I'm sure they made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And it was, either you go along with us or we'll do to you what we did to Goldwater. Do you want to be president and maybe do some good? And I think that the entire Bush administration, pardon me, Reagan administration was run by George Herbert Walker Bush, former director of the Council on Foreign Relations, former member of the Trilateral Commission, former member of the Bilderbergers, former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, one of the most influential men in the world today. George Bush ran the Reagan administration, and if Reagan did what they wanted, fine. If he didn't do what they wanted, didn't really matter. They just wouldn't carry out his directives. lives. He only did a couple of things on his own. One was the invasion of Grenada, a Grenada, which they didn't want him to do, and I think there was one or two other things. But ordinarily, of course, they directed the presidency, just as George W. Bush is not running the presidency. He didn't even know it was in his speech. You know, that all this talk about the uranium, you mean, he gave a speech, he hadn't read it, he didn't know it was in it. George Tenet said, well, they sent the president's speech over to me to review, and I didn't read it. Well, who's running the presidency? Mm-hmm. Who's writing the speeches? Who's laying out our policy? And it is not George W. Bush. And you must understand the same thing happened with Ronald Reagan. Any other questions, Neil?
No. What a shame.
What a shame that we can't get a man in there who believes in America and can carry out his promises.
Yeah, well, thank you. He had a great speaking ability, and he was really gifted in that. It's just too bad that he got influenced by all those other people.
I think I agree with you totally, and I think that I believe in many respects he wanted to do what was right, but unfortunately, in many respects, he was never allowed to. Thanks so much for calling, Neil.
Thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye. Okay. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, why, we'd love, of course, to hear from you. And, of course, what we're talking about is the Institute of the Constitution and an opportunity for you to do something. Now, let me tell you that, you know, liberals are dedicated. They're willing to spend their evenings, night after night after night, weekend after weekend, and they're willing to put their money up. They're willing to do anything they can because they have a goal and objective. They want to change America. Now, there are a lot of good liberals out there who really have never heard about our heritage of freedom. They don't understand it. They somehow think that if we just get the right people into office, everything would be all right. And, of course, the founding fathers realized that there is no such person as the right person. As Thomas Jefferson said, you know, we say that people cannot govern themselves, so how can we possibly have other people governing over us? Mm-hmm. Have we found angels to rule over us? And that was, of course, the secret of America, was to limit the power of government so the men could be free. For as John Locke had said, that government governs best, that governs the least. Let's go to Mike calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I want to pick up on your last caller and what you had to say about the Bushes and the Reagans and who's running the presidency. I think that's one of the greatest questions anybody can ask these days. I think we have a word for what was going on with Reagan, as you described. It's called puppet government.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, personally, I don't know how this can be proved, but maybe you've proved it, Stan, many times over the last how many years you've been on the air. I think our puppet government goes back 60 to 70 years.
I won't disagree with you at all.
No.
I think that says a lot.
Woodrow Wilson began the process of the destruction, and some of the roots go all the way back to Abraham Lincoln, who was the first dictator that we ever had in this country, if you understand some of the things that he did, suspending habeas corpus and other violations of the Constitution. A process began of undoing what our founding fathers had done. And the sad thing is that along the way, in the process of that destruction, there were not people who recognized what was happening enough to stand up and rally basically the citizens together to say, this cannot be permitted. We will stop it. And we've gone a long way down that road, and we need to turn this around. And the only way to turn it around, of course, is not to depend on the current people in power, because most of them have already been corrupted, as you've already mentioned in Reagan's example. He didn't have the power to really do what he had promised to do, and many of the other people in Congress and the Senate, the same problem exists. We need to turn it around by having citizens who recognize what the Constitution is about and who are committed to fulfilling it, and who are committed to putting people in office only who will do that, and throwing people out of office who refuse to follow the Constitution. As of the senators or the congressmen and senators currently in power, I think there might be one who's committed to not allowing one piece of legislation to pass that does not pass constitutional muster, and that's Ron Paul. I don't know if you're familiar with Ron Paul and the work he does. Are you?
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else, Mike?
Well, a slight disagreement regarding his comments about throwing out those in office who don't follow the Constitution. We have to recognize it's much more than the presidency. that's in this position of puppet. I believe that what we have to do, those who involve themselves in turning things around, we have to recognize and discover the puppet masters, and is it possible to throw them out?
Well, of course, as you well know, this is really a spiritual battle, and many of these people are energized by a dark spiritual force.
Mm-hmm.
They have a different worldview. But our job right now is just to get people to think and to understand what's going on. And, of course, in the final analysis, the battle is the Lord's, but our job is to do our best. And I would never have to want to stand before the bar of judgment and say, well, I was just too busy to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything? God bless, Mike. And let's go to Nathan calling from Contra Costa. Nathan, how are you?
Hi. Well, listen, gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening.
Yeah, I believe this shadow government, or what we might call this sort of force, is probably very, very old. I mean, I imagine it's hundreds of years old, and that it, you know, has run our country for a long, long, long time. You know, possibly since, you know, for 200 years or so. And it's, I think to really get it back, we really, really, to really get from under it, we have to really, really focus on what are God's laws. And I think that that's a focus. We have to focus on the particulars of them, and each of us vow to follow them, because if we don't, I'm convinced that divine judgment will be at work, and I don't think it'll be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It goes deeper than the politicians, who's in office, you know, who elects them. We elect them, and the reason we elect them is because they promise us stuff, they promise us what somebody else has, and, you know, we elect them, even though we were established as a republic. You know, we have, we've elected another system of government, at least that's a simple way of putting it. The actual reality of it is far more complex, but until we ourselves vow to obey God's laws in our hearts as well as outwardly, and don't just say that it's grace and that there's grace and because it's grace we're going to go to heaven, you have to follow God's laws until we, as a collective society, do that, and it is a decision that we must make en masse, I don't think we're going to make it.
Right.
I appreciate your optimism, and I
mm-hmm. We have to do our best, and of course what we want is revival in the country. We want to change the hearts of men. I agree with you. Thank you so much for calling, Nathan. Okay, fine. Well, how would you respond to what Nathan said?
Well, you know, the thing I appreciate what Nathan said is about the law of God. That's what our founding fathers were focused on. George Washington, in his inaugural address in 1789, said, "The propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained." He was saying there, a nation that follows the Bible is going to experience God's blessing. A nation that does not follow the Bible is going to experience God's judgment. And we look at what the Supreme Court has just declared, that God's law is unconstitutional and God's law is illegal and needs to be thrown out. We can expect any nation that rebels against God's law ultimately to come under God's judgment. And he's right, it begins with us. Christians need to return to strict obedience to God's law, need to study God's law, and to teach other people God's law.
Okay, fine. Let's go to Jim calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good evening, Jim.
Hi. Hi, Stan. Hey. I just wanted to bring up an issue that's been on my mind a lot lately, and that has to do with the trade deficit and our government's trade policies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And, you know, especially with the economic times being what they are. And, you know, I was just wondering, now I know that our trade policies here in the last 20 years are a deviation from the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in your perspective on that and how that, you know, that the trade policies are not consistent with what's in Article 1, Section 8. And perhaps, you know, how this ties into the theories of Adam Smith.
All right, fine. Do you want to address that, David?
Yes, one of the things that I think you may be referring to is NAFTA and
NAFTA and GATT, and of course the fact that we're shipping our jobs overseas. We are, of course, doing away with jobs here in this country as our industry moves offshore and is actively being encouraged by the government. And of course, Jim is concerned with the massive trade deficit that we are running up year after year. This year it'll be close to $500 billion in deficit as we simply try to spend ourselves into prosperity. And of course, we in the process are eating our own seed corn.
That's right, and there's a purpose behind that, we know, and that purpose is to create a one-world government and to reduce our standard of living to a point where we are dependent upon the one-world government and we cannot, function apart from it. And of course, that's part of the reason of breaking down all the barriers between nations, part of the reason why the flood of illegal immigrants is permitted, and I emphasize that permitted. There's choices been made in the past administration as well as the current administration to allow flood of illegal immigrants to continue, basically the lawless to be rewarded for their lawlessness. Now, you're referring to Section 8, which says that the powers granted to Congress are specifically to regulate commerce with foreign nations as well as with Indian tribes and among the several states and so on, so that they are granted a power to regulate commerce but not to destroy our own national ability to function in the world. Is that correct? Is that what you're focused on there?
Well, I know that the federal government is supposed to regulate international trade, and that means charging tariff taxes on anything that's imported into the country.
Mm-hmm. All right. One time, we were able to run the federal government based upon the tariffs and excise taxes. Didn't need an income tax. We did not need other taxes to support the federal government. Jim, I think you have to understand that if you read Karl Marx advocated free trade. Why? Because he realized it would be a means of breaking down the structure of our society and creating discontent. There's more and more people are out of work, and of course they're losing their homes and losing hope. But then, of course, they'll take to the streets. And he said free trade is the path, of course, to bringing about the social revolution. And, of course, isn't it interesting that our leaders are pushing Karl Marx's philosophy? And, of course, but as we move towards this time of increasing discontent, do you realize, of course, in the last 5 years, pardon me, the last 3 years, one in five Americans has lost their job, and many of them without any, of course, benefits at all after that. And then, of course, we get more and more discontent. You don't have to worry because they have the National Police Force in place. Of course, we're putting them in place under the Office of Homeland Security in the name of fighting terrorism. And I would like to suggest this has nothing to do with fighting terrorism. They know exactly what's going to happen next.
Yes.
Okay, anything else, Jim?
Well, I'd like to bring up another name, too. I'm concerned about the tie-in with Adam Smith.
All right, fine.
Who I understand is a British subject, and he published his Wealth of Nations in 1776.
Right.
And I'm just putting this out here as a question, you know, because I have more research to do on this, which I intend to do. But I'm under the impression that a lot of his principles that he wrote, you know, for the British Empire is being transferred to the United States.
Right, and of course, his philosophy of free trade pretty well destroyed Great Britain, which, well, at the time, I was very young, they controlled a third of the landmass of the world. And at one time, of course, they were the greatest nation in the world. At one time, of course, Great Britain ruled the waves. Today, they simply wave the rules. Okay,
right.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Okay, yes, thank
bye-bye.
You.
Let's go to Dolores calling from Yakima. Hi, Dolores, how are
good
you doing?
Evening. Hello, Dr. Stan. Thank you so much for your loyalty to America warms my heart.
Well, God bless you, and just your job up there is get as many people as you can listening to our programs.
Yes. By the way, I studied under Dr. Cleon Skousen on the Constitution. We passed a certificate, each one of us, and I thoroughly appreciated the work that was involved.
Well, of course, you know, he did a wonderful, wonderful job. We're sort of, at least the Institute of the Constitution is picking up now. Cleon's been out of the battle for 20 years or more, and we've got to pick it up, and we've got to get not only the older folks like you and I, but the young people to understand the miracle of America and the wonderful heritage we had so that we can preserve it for generations yet unborn.
Exactly, exactly. I'm just 100% there. I have a, I've written this down so that I do not make too terribly a mistake in speaking. So I'm going to begin. And it hinges on what Mr. Whitney is speaking about tonight, only it's in a different direction, on a different issue. The same direction. Your subject tonight is to understand what is in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. I understand the role of government, whether it be local, county, state, or national, is the people's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which means we have the right to work, own property, and to protect our property. Here in this city, in Washington State, the people stand in awe of this socialistic-minded government, kneel to its mandates, transgressing these three freedoms set forth in the Declaration of Independence. As you, Mr. Whitney, stated earlier, the nucleus of population in Washington State is centered west of the mountains. Even so, our people are being overrun by this socialistic bent. Where is the wisdom and the knowledge to combat this situation with the government issuing these mandates?
Well, of course, that's why we have to get back to the Constitution,
right.
Dolores. That's what this is all about. This is where the first place you have to start. You know, the longest trip starts with the first step, and this is the first step. I think it's exciting. Of course, David Whitney and, of course, the people he works with are setting these institutes up all across America. We just need about 200 of them there in Washington State, and I think we could begin to take that around.
We actually
have, you know, a program up in Seattle. I wish we had that on every day, because then we could begin to get the people to understand. And I will tell you, there are a lot of liberals out there who embrace socialism and don't even understand what it's all about. And if we could get them to understand where we're headed, why, they'd be joining us in this battle for freedom.
That's right. If people understand that rights are given by God, not by government, and the government is granted its powers, the government has no rights, the government is granted its powers by the people, the consent of the governed. We, the people, are the ones who grant government its powers, because God is the only one who's given us those rights of life, liberty, and property.
And Dolores, the reason I do what I do is because radio is the last means we have of reaching the American people. So, you know, help us to reach them, encourage others to listen. We're fortunate to have the opportunity to be on the American Christian Network here every evening. We just need to be on other stations up there and get people thinking. And, you know, even many of the liberals who listen to us after a while begin to realize that we don't disagree with them as far as the problem. It's simply the solution we disagree with. We don't want more government. We want less government. And that's the only way people can be free.
And stop this invasion of people's homes, actual homes.
Yes.
It is getting to be very, very bad. I have your number, Mr. Whitney, and I belong to an organization. I'm not ashamed to mention it, the John Birch Society.
Yes, I'm familiar.
And we could easily adopt a constitutional study.
Great.
Well, what
is
your
decision to do that?
What did you think about getting it? Because when the Birch Society got started 40 years ago, that's what they were doing. And I wish that it's a shame they didn't continue that as the first step to getting into an understanding of what America is all about.
You have to have a thesis, like Dean DeGoacher says. We have to have a thesis, because theirs is the antithesis, and they will not listen to you. They run right over you, roughshod.
Well, we have a voice, and we just need to get that voice louder until it becomes a great chorus. Thank you so much, Dolores. God bless
you. Thank
you.
Thank you, Dolores.
Being true to our country and true to our Lord.
I'll never be anything else.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
All right, fine. Well, there are a lot of good people out there, and there are a lot of younger people who have really got to thinking, and even though I don't agree with Rush Limbaugh on everything, in fact, he will not tell people the full truth. He's moved a lot of people from the far left to the middle. Our job is to move them from the middle to an understanding of what this is really all about. And I don't even like the terms left and right.
We want
the truth, and the truth is God's truth. It has never changed. It never will change. And I think once people begin to think, and of course what Rush has done is get some people thinking partway, we've got to get them thinking the rest of the way. Well, anyway, we've got about five more minutes. If there's anybody else who'd like to put a call in, our number, 214 Liberty, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And certainly this program, starting back in Maryland, is really spreading all across the country, isn't it, David?
That's right. 22 states now have either conducted or are in the midst of conducting a class, or there's many who are going to be conducting it in the fall as people's schedules settle down and back from vacations. And I'd have to tell people, it is an enjoyable experience leading and hosting a class like this. And I've done this a couple times, and it's really an exciting experience because you see the light bulb go on in people's minds as they begin to hear this material, as they begin to realize they've been lied to and they've been deceived, and they cannot trust the media, nor the newspapers, nor the news magazines, that all of those are part of the lie, the big lie about what our country was founded to be. They become excited because they realize, wait a minute, now I begin to put the pieces together of all these things that have been confusing to me. I've been frustrated, not knowing what to do, and having a sense that things are hopeless. Now I understand why. I understand also that the path backward to reclaiming our nation and taking it back to what our founders designed is a path first, as you said, of educating people. Because if we have an army of people, millions of people strong, who understand these principles, we can turn our nation back. And that process involves first each individual understanding what the Constitution says as our founders intended it, and understanding that this nation was founded as a Christian nation, it was designed to function as a Christian nation, and as you quoted John Adams earlier, the Constitution is only fit for a moral and religious people. That in a sense, they designed our form of government that it would be dependent upon Christianity, and that the teaching of the Christian truth and the churches of the land would be the conscience that would keep our nation on track. You would not have to have as many laws if the law of God ruled in the heart of the individual man and the individual citizen. The more godly the citizens are, the easier a nation would be to govern. Fewer police would be required, the less jails would be required, and the nation would function in a much clearer and cleaner fashion. During the period just leading up to the War for Independence, several things happened that were really astounding. One was that King George III began to shut down the court system. He was going to transfer all the court functions that were taking place in our country to England, because he could control those courts, he could control those judges and the juries there, but he couldn't control them here in the colonies. And so as he shut those down, basically the functions of government were being taken back to England, and there was the possibility here in this land that anarchy would rule. And the amazing thing that took place is, because the majority of people were Christians and were following God's law, that instead of anarchy and so on, there was peace. There was not a sense of which unrest and disorder reigned when the legal system was no longer functioning in this land. I can't imagine what that would be like if that took place today.
Well, David, somebody just called in. They want to know if you can get a home study version if there's no class in the area. In other words, could you just get that?
Oh, yes. Actually, you could order the host kit, 410-760-9068. You could order the host kit and just go through it yourself, perhaps with one other member of your family, or invite a few neighbors if you want. But yes, you could do that on your own.
And, of course, this is what's so vitally important. Well, David, thank you. We're out of time. But I really appreciate so much for being with us. And
I appreciate everything
you're doing back there at the Institute of the Constitution.
May God bless your work, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan. And, of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners up in the Great Northwest that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're dependent upon you to continue reaching out across America now on 57, 58 different outlets every week. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family or know more about us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, pray for the Institute of the Constitution and pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and our protection. So until tomorrow evening, when we'll be back with you at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, but we ask you to hold your calls for the time being because, of course, want to have Randy Thomason with us, and he's going to bring us abreast of what's going on up in the Sacramento area. Of course, we're moving now towards a recall, and this is really a very interesting phenomenon because, you see, the establishment doesn't want the recall. The Bush administration doesn't want the recall. The Republican Party here, Mr. Parsky, who bought, of course, control of the Republican Party, they've spent millions of dollars to buy up the central committees all across the state, as they did here in the Monterey area, and they did in the Santa Cruz area, and really all across the state. They simply spent tens of millions of dollars, if not more, and they brought Howard Jarvis back from the grave. In fact, the flyers that were put out here in the Monterey County area, they had Howard Jarvis there. He's been dead, you know, for 15 years or more, but they had pictures of him saying, vote for these conservatives, and of course, none of the people he was voting for were conservatives, and of course, that's how they took over. And of course, these were the people, of course, who wanted to actually block the recall. Why? Because the way we may get somebody in the governor's position that they can't control, and you know, California is the sixth or seventh largest economy in the world, despite all of the actions of our current administration. They don't want, of course, the people to have the opportunity to pick a governor, and they'll give you every reason why the system doesn't work. But, of course, they were never concerned about the system until it looked like an honest, God-fearing man might actually become governor of the state of California. This could be almost a turning point for our nation, at least for our state. Or, of course, depending on how the vote goes, it could be the worst thing. So, Randy Thomason, what's going on today?
Well, Dr. Stan, hello to you. It's sort of the best of times and the worst of times for California.
Right, it's the age of reason. It was the age of discontent, right?
Yes, and so in pain, which is a great teacher, the people are rising up. And I want to spend a moment talking about this, what you're hearing these days from Gray Davis's lips, that he says, I want to take the state in a progressive direction and not in a conservative direction. Let me explain what those things mean. Progressive is nothing more than the word liberal, which has taken on bad repute, so the liberals don't want to say that anymore, and they want to say progressive, like they're making progress. Unfortunately, progressive's definition of progress is to undermine, overturn, and attack everything that is traditional or is sacred. And when we look at this, what is the liberal agenda, then, of Governor Gray Davis, and what is the conservative agenda? Dr. Stan, you probably know the difference, but let me say what it is. The progressive liberal agenda says that marriage is not for a man and a woman. It's for two men or for two women. Conservatives would say, no, marriage is only for a man and a woman. Duh. Look in Webster's. Look in the Bible. Look at nature. Look at the voters. The liberal progressives will say that a child belongs to the state. The conservatives will say a child belongs to his or her parents, not the state. The liberal progressives would say that a person is not responsible for committing crimes. It's the environment that made him do it. The conservatives would say, no, each person is responsible for his or her own actions. The liberal progressives would say that the baby is not a baby, that's tissue. Despite medical science, they continue to say this is tissue in the womb. A conservative would say, duh, look at medical science. This is a baby. This is a baby's hands, eyes, ears, feet. look at the heart beating, look at the brain waves, and look at its own DNA and its own blood type. And then I would draw another distinction. A liberal / progressive would say that religious freedom is something that is of the past, and we must not discriminate. Not even Christians can discriminate. Excuse me, religious freedom and parental rights are sacred institutions, and I don't care what agenda it is, the abortion agenda, the homosexual agenda, the environmental agenda, it has no right to trample religious freedom, which our founding fathers fought and died for. And I think that's a good description of the difference between liberal progressive versus conservative. Oh, should I mention one more thing? The liberal progressives boo the Boy Scouts, and they did so at the recent convention, which they called the Democrat Convention just 2 years ago in Los Angeles. The conservatives support the Boy Scouts because they believe in the First Amendment and the right that was derived from that, the right of association, that people should have private property and they can choose their own members of their own organization. Thank you very much. I think the state wants to go in a direction that is not the liberal direction.
I mean,
I really think,
I really think, Randy, that the vast majority of the people in the state are certainly, with a growing Hispanic population, are conservative. Most Hispanics are really conservative once they understand what the issues are. And on the family and moral issues, they're on our side. They're hardworking people. A lot of them are against the illegal immigration because it's taking away their jobs. They want, of course, a law and order because, of course, it's their kids that are getting shot. And, of course, what we need to do, of course, is get everybody to understand what the philosophical issues are, what America is all about, and of course how it is being usurped by these people who are intent upon destroying this nation, its sovereignty, and merging us into this one world dictatorship. And of course a lot of the liberals are really offended at that concept. That's not what they want. They just want a utopian society created by government without the realization that government can never solve our problems. Government is our problem, and of course the miracle of America was that the power of the central and of the state governments were to be limited, and matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be left as close as possible to the local community, where good people would help one another, and where if there was no, there had to be a safety net, but it was to be a local safety net, and nobody ever starved to death in America, at least not until government got involved.
Dr. Stan, I think there's a backlash against the liberal agenda. Some of the best news I read today was on the front cover of USA Today, a cover story entitled, Americans Less Tolerant on Gay Issues, Poll Indicates Backlash. And in the last 2 months, less people are accepting the homosexual agenda in America. And, of course, people should not accept what has happened. The redefinition of marriage in Canada, that is wrong. As far as I'm concerned, Canada can freeze over.
Okay, but really, it's all a violation of God's law. I mean, I can't say that anything about homosexuality. All I can say is what God said. I don't want people to accept my morality. I want them to accept God's morality. And God said it's wrong. And if God says it's wrong, it is wrong. And, of course, we can see that in the AIDS statistics where over a quarter of a million gays are already dead from this epidemic, and what a terrible tragedy that they died, but they died because, of course, they violated God's law.
It's very, very sad. The only healthy sexual lifestyle is a monogamous heterosexual marriage. That's what safe sex is, and that's why more and more young people are pursuing abstinence. They want to save themselves until marriage, and that's real health. Dr. Stan, I need to tell you that the budget passed in the state legislature today.
And I understand, of course, what they've done in their wisdom is they've simply borrowed the money and they've said, well, we'll put it off until next year. Isn't that about it?
Yeah, it wasn't wisdom. It was more a defeat in the sense of living more on credit cards. The problem is not going to be fixed. The problem of being over $10 billion a year in the hole, that's our money, that's, quote, our government, is going to continue, and of course the car tax is going to continue to be tripled, and people starting this Friday, if you have your car renewal in October, you're going to start getting your notices that your car tax has been tripled. That's thanks to Gray Davis and Steve Wesley, our state controller, who schemed to do that without claiming public credit. Well, they get all the credit. Governor Gray Davis has tripled the car tax, and that's why I think he'll be recalled.
Well, now, Chris, the other thing is that isn't there going to be a lawsuit? Because really, legally, they couldn't do it, isn't that?
I think there will be a lawsuit, but what is more likely is a ballot referendum. I'm surprised I haven't seen the lawsuit yet, but Tom McClintock has promised a ballot referendum at some time. He's running for governor, one of three generally conservative candidates, and he said if he's governor, he'll give the legislature 30 days to repeal the car tax, and then he'll go to the ballot after that. But it's going to be really interesting. The recall, obviously, is the big news up here. Will Schwarzenegger get in? Will Reardon get in? Well, it looks like there's going to be a couple pro-family guys, but then some liberal Republicans like Schwarzenegger and Reardon. Of course, Michael Huffington, the homosexual slash bisexual former U.S. Senate candidate, he is taking out papers. Actually, Dr. Stan, there's been over 90 people who have taken out papers to run for governor. Of course, only a handful have paid their fees. Governor Gray Davis is trying to make sport with that, saying, well, you don't know who you're going to get, he told one newspaper. Well, actually, we do know that whoever is going to be in is much more likely to be an improvement over Gray Davis. But I'll tell you, my preference would be a generally pro-family governor, for sure.
All right, fine. Anything else you want to get your website out there and your number?
Sure would, Dr. Stan. Visit our website today. We've got a lot of information about the recall. We've got action alerts, how you can make a difference. It's www.savecalifornia.com, savecalifornia.com. And also, I'd like to give not my phone number, but the phone number for Governor Gray Davis. He needs to hear from you this week, and he needs to be told to not sign the transsexual bill, AB 196. Dr. Stan, this bill is on his desk now. It passed the state Senate because no Republicans spoke against it. And the Democrats voted it through. And this bill fines businesses and Boy Scouts and property owners $150,000 if they do not hire a transsexual, a cross-dresser, or a drag queen. This is such an injustice, such an intolerant bill. Call Governor Gray Davis. Urge him to veto AB 196. That phone number is 916 area code 445-2841, 916-445-2841. Call the governor tonight and leave a recording. Dr. Stan, we're fighting to win here.
All right, fine. And again, it's savecalifornia.com.
Thank you for you, Dr. Stan.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that's Randy Thomason and with the Campaign for California Families. And, you know, these are indeed exciting times that we are in at the present time. And, you know, I've never seen anything quite like this before, and I've been at this for over 40 years. And here you've got, of course, the leaders of the Republican Party opposing the recall of a Democratic governor who's really created a terrible, terrible problem here in the state. And, of course, the rank-and-file people, both Democrats and Republicans, supporting this recall. And, you know, Grave Davis's records, I think he's got about 10% of the vote locked in for sure. But, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to be talking to many of the candidates here to give you an opportunity to hear them and make up your own mind. So right now, though, let's go, of course, to Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Foundation. Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Oh, doing just great.
Well, how goes the legal battle for America, for the soul of America?
Well, I've got some great news. One of our affiliate attorneys and worked on a case.
Just speak up just a little louder, please.
Oh, certainly. One of our affiliate attorneys, Dr. Stanley, worked on a case which gave an incredible victory for the work that we're doing. In fact, it's probably one of the most important cases out of the Ninth Circuit in 15 years. This, you know, we've been fighting with Child Protective Services in the past, and in the past they've had this blanket immunity of liability, and they could, just like they were a prosecutor, I mean, this total immunity from liability.
These are Child Protective Services, right? CPS.
That's right. And sometimes they do things that provide false information. They take kids that shouldn't be taken. They give them to unqualified foster parents. All kinds of examples that we've had to deal with to defend parents' rights. And it's been very frustrating. Well, now the door's been blown wide open. The Ninth Circuit came down with a crashing decision ruling that no longer are social workers, CPS, totally given absolute immunity. Now, they're given the same scrutiny as police officers. So just as when a police officer violates someone's rights or does something wrong, they're held responsible for it in the same way a social worker will be now, which gives us incredible firepower now in the courts to more zealously and effectively defend the rights of parents. And we at the Pacific Justice Institute are very happy about this.
Well, you know, power corrupts, and absolutely power corrupts absolutely every social worker if they know that they, of course, are answerable to no one. And I think that really is exciting to know. And I'm sure there are a lot of good social workers out there.
Yes.
But, of course, when we analyze what's been happening with CPS, we see tremendous misuse of power and tremendous misuse of authority, and there's no justification for that in a free society. So I think that is really wonderful that you've been able to get that. And, of course, that will have ramifications all across the state. I'm sure, of course, it must have sent a shudder through many of the social workers who have been running roughshod over parents' rights and over children's rights.
That's right. It's a big victory. We're just, we at the Pacific Justice Institute are just really glad to be a part of it and have our great people like Donnie Cox, who do such a great job assisting on the case. And if anyone ever needs help, they should feel free to give us a call. And we'll line them up with the right attorney and help them out and provide emergency counsel. And you know, what's going on with the governor's issue, I can tell you one thing. We at Pacific Justice will still keep fighting in the courts. And I'm just really excited about this victory.
Well, go get your telephone number out there, Brad.
Sure. Our telephone number is 888-305-9129. That's 888-305-9129. And our webpage is pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org. And they get all kinds of information, including signing up to get our press releases on these important cases.
Okay, well, thank you so very, very much for everything you do, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was, of course, Brad Dacus, and this really is a tremendous, tremendous case, you know, because, of course, social workers now can be held to the same standards as police officers, and they don't get a get-out-of-jail-free card as they have run roughshod over the rights of people. Now, some of them are wonderful, wonderful people, but some people, as I said, power corrupts. And absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. And, of course, in a free society, you can't give people the ability to run roughshod over people's rights. And the child abuse industry, the Child Protective Services, has really been a serious problem for many, many, many years, not only here in California, but all throughout the world. Well, and now, of course, we're going to our good friend John Spring. And John is a geographer, and he has his own program in Southern California. And we're going to talk about some of the things that he's privy to, and of course, we can talk at least in part about the Middle East. And of course, now you know what a tar pit is or a tar baby. Tar babies are, you know, you pick them up and they stick to you because, of course, they got the sticky tar on them. A tar pit, you fall into a tar pit, how do you get out of it? In fact, the tar pits in Southern California, they're full of animals. They're the skeletons of the animals that fell into the tar pit. And we're in a tar pit, of course, in Iraq today. And, of course, our soldiers, a couple are getting killed every day because they've made no preparations at all for police power. What we should do, of course, is get the Iraqi police back working. Oh, we couldn't have them working. Some of them had supported Saddam Hussein. In that country, you had to support Saddam Hussein, or you didn't have a job, and in fact, many times they would kill you. Now, people who are responsible for atrocities is one thing, like Saddam and his sons, but the average individual, well, he was just trying to get along and survive. And let me tell you, that if we're going to go after the people who supported Saddam Hussein, then maybe we ought to start with Donald Rumsfeld, who supported him back in 1983, and, of course, the Bush administration that supported him right up until the time of the Kuwait War, and that would be George Herbert Walker Bush. And even after Saddam Hussein had used poison gas on the Iranians, why, of course, the United States was pouring massive amounts of money into Iraq, and, of course, backing Saddam Hussein right up until the time of the Kuwait War in the fall of 1990. So if we're going to go after the people who supported Saddam Hussein, maybe we ought to start here in this country. What do you think? Well, we've got John Spring on the line. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Real fine, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Okay, well, why don't you just bring us up to date the things that you, of course, are concerned about.
Well, I'm concerned about a variety of things, from China to Cuba to Afghanistan and your topic currently of Iraq, because all of these do need to be addressed, and unfortunately, all of these, I'm afraid, have something to do with the CFR, the Council of Foreign Relations, and our current leadership in Washington.
And
primarily,
you didn't mention North Korea, because I think we have to be very aware of the fact that North Korea now is moving up in rockets and military units to the DMZ. America's pulling its troops back. Donald Rumsfeld's talking about calling up more reserve units and more National Guard units because we need more soldiers. Why do we need more soldiers? What are they considering? And, of course, you have to understand, this all has to do with empire. And, of course, unfortunately, I don't think the average person wants an empire. The average American doesn't. But, of course, our leaders do. And, of course, behind this whole thing is going to be the forces that I believe are going to lead to the demise of America as a great world leader and the transfer of power to the European Union, as was prophesied over 2,000 years ago. But why don't you go ahead and pick up the story, John, as we begin analyzing. Let's talk about Iraq first, and then perhaps we can get over into North Korea. But let's talk about Iraq, Iran, Syria, Saudi Arabia.
That sounds good for a start. First of all, Dr. Stan, we need to understand that the infrastructure within Afghanistan, that's true of Afghanistan, but also primarily now in Iraq, is not being rebuilt at the pace that it should be, and the civilians are becoming very disenchanted. I had an opportunity today to speak with a fellow who's of Middle Eastern ancestry who's been in contact with people who have recently returned from Iraq, and they said that after the bombings by the U.S. in the past, Saddam Hussein was able to get the electricity going in a matter of days. It's been months now, and the infrastructure has not been repaired for the people in cosmopolitan areas such as Baghdad and other surrounding cities. And the people are becoming very disenchanted with the Americans because they thought we were more sophisticated, technologically speaking, than the Iraqis.
Now, it seems very difficult to believe we could have done such a poor job unintentionally.
Yes, which leads me to believe that it's deliberate negligence on the part of our leadership. And that's a strong statement. And I think the same thing is true, even more so, with the case of Afghanistan. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but what has happened in Afghanistan is really quite tragic. Let me just give you a brief analogy. What would have Americans felt like if, for example, at the end of the Revolutionary War, the War for Independence, that after General Washington and his associates won the war, only to find out a few years later that it was Benedict Arnold who became our leader, perhaps because the King of France decided that it would be more convenient for his policies to do so through a secret treaty made with Great Britain. I know it sounds fallacious, but in reality, this is what has happened in Afghanistan. There was a person by the name of Fahim who was one of the Marxist communist leaders of the coup that took place in 1978, and he currently is in control of the Karzai regime. He is the leader behind the scenes who was making all of the moves.
In other words, what you're saying is the communists are in control after all these years. We defeated them back in 1980, and now we have brought them back to power because he could not possibly be in power without our help and support. But why should we be surprised about that? You know, we have actually covertly kept Fidel Castro in power. We financed both Russia and China. Why should we be surprised that we're financing or allowing the communists to take control of Afghanistan? Certainly the communists are now taking control of Venezuela. They're taking control of El Salvador. They've already got control of Brazil. Why should we be surprised that we're allowing them to take control of Afghanistan and not letting the American people know?
Well, you're right. We should not really be surprised, but we should be outraged. And I say that because one of these days, I'm hoping and praying that America will wake up and find that we have been sold out by so many leaders over so many generations, and we need to replace the type of leadership that is perpetuating itself within Washington. We need to get away from supporting or allowing any members of the CFR, the Trilaterals Commission, the Skull and Bones, to take power here in America. It's devastating. We're allowing ourselves to be destroyed from within. And this is what concerns me so much regarding Afghanistan, because you have people such as Condoleezza Rice, who was trained and educated and received her doctorate from Stanford University in Soviet and Russian studies. I'm sure that she speaks Russian reasonably well, can communicate, and that's why she was used by one of the large oil companies such as Chevron, Standard Oil Company of California, to negotiate with the countries surrounding the Mideast, the newly independent states of the former Soviet Union. And as a result of that, with Chevron, she became a director, and then, of course, shortly thereafter, she became the National Security Advisor to our current President George W. Bush. And she was also in the process of sponsoring meetings between the Marxist leaders of the former Soviet Union of the Central Asian nations prior to 9/11, and many of the plans made to invade Afghanistan were made in advance, well in advance, I should say, of 9/11. But of course, 9/11 gave us the green light to invade, and whom did we use? We used a person by the name of General Dostum, who was one of the warlords who fought on the side of the communists during the Afghan War.
Now, could you go into the fact that you mentioned that the plans for war with Afghanistan were made before the 9/11 attack? Are you suggesting that we were intending to go to war in Afghanistan before the attack on the World Trade Center?
Very definitely, because there are certain interests in the United States that are very prone to making deals regarding the very vast Aral-Caspian Basin for natural gas and petroleum. And the only problem is, because it's within a landlocked region, there has to be a means whereby pipelines can take this out through various directions to markets throughout the world. And one of the, and this is another thing that's of interest, is the fact that prior to 9/11, there was a person by the name of Hamid Karzai who was working with UNICAL as a negotiator with the intent of negotiating with the Taliban so that a proposed pipeline route could be resolved going through western Afghanistan from Turkmenistan down to Pakistan to the Indian Ocean coast for markets overseas.
In other words, going from Turkmenistan to Afghanistan to Pakistan down into the Indian Ocean, right?
Correct.
Arabian Sea.
And he failed during his negotiations. He does not have the most strengthy personality, and he failed as a negotiator, but because he had a background in oil, the George W. Bush administration felt that he should become the next leader of Afghanistan.
And I think it's so important for our leaders to understand that in the new report that just came out, the investigative report, they mentioned that we already had our ships and our military forces in the Arabian Sea before the September 11th attack, in preparation, of course, they don't say that, but of course, in preparation for going to war, we had troops in Uzbekistan and several of the other countries over there.
That is true.
All we had our troops there long before the September 11th attack. And then, of course, the book is called The Forbidden Truth, written by a couple of French authors when they actually quote a man named Niaz Nayak, who was the foreign minister of Pakistan, who was told in July of 2001,
yes,
that, of course, we were going to war with Afghanistan. It was already planned ahead of time. They told the people of Afghanistan, we'll either pave your streets with gold or we'll pave them with carpet bombs. Which do you want? And, of course, those stupid people, I shouldn't say stupid people, whatever they are in the Taliban, of course, would not give up their national sovereignty, and so we simply killed them. We'll be back here in just a moment to complete the program here. Welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is John Spring. We're talking about, of course, Afghanistan, and what people have forgotten is that the United States had backed, of course, the Mujahideen all through the 1980s and Osama bin Laden in their battle against the Soviets, but of course we had precipitated the Soviet invasion in 1979 very intentionally. Brzezinski actually admitted this, and this is covered in a book called Unholy Wars, and 10 years after the invasion, he finally said, yes, I knew what was going to happen. I told President Carter that if we began financing the Mujahideen against the puppet government there, the Soviet puppet government, that the Soviets would invade. So we got the war going. We brought the Islamic warriors from all around the world to fight in this battle against the infidel. At that time, it was the Soviet Union. And we indoctrinated them in this radical form of Wahhabism, which is, of course, native to Saudi Arabia. Not only that, but we put out $56 million for textbooks to train the youth of certainly Afghanistan and Pakistan in the radical form of Islam. This is your tax dollars pushing this whole idea of how noble it is to fight and die for Allah, how noble it is to kill the infidels. And we were pushing Wahhabism. We financed it, and we indoctrinated those young people in this radical form of Islam. We began financing the Taliban in 1994. We continued financing them up until 2001. If you read the president's speech on the 20th of September of 1991, before the Congress of the United States, he said, the United States is the largest single financer of humanitarian, provider of humanitarian aid to Afghanistan, which really means we're financing the Taliban, which, of course, they, of course, control the distribution of food there. And, of course, we were propping up their government. And then, of course, we turned around and sent our bombers to kill them and, of course, to create the chaos, which is there in Afghanistan. And I dare say that as bad as the Taliban were, they're no worse at all than they are in Saudi Arabia as far as the oppression of women or taking away rights or the use of Sharia law. And, of course, how do you justify, building up a country and then turning on it and destroying it? Because, well, they had Osama bin Laden there, but they offered to send him out of the country. They offered to turn him over to a third country for a trial. But, of course, eventually we demanded they release everybody there to us who was part of the al-Qaeda leadership, but we never told them who we wanted because George Bush was intent upon going to war, and that is what's so inexcusable. And the American people have gone right along with it because we only lost a relatively few men. And we hired the communists to, of course, carry out the battle for us. And then, of course, we let them take control of Afghanistan. Something seriously wrong with this picture, John.
Very much so, Dr. Monti. For example, very shortly after we took control of Afghanistan, rather than zeroing in on General Dostum, who committed a lot of atrocities in Kabul and large carloads of corpses were taken out and someone accidentally pulled one of the levers and the bodies just flowed out like fish at a cannery. It was just grotesque, all of these bodies coming out of this large container. And there were a multitude of containers.
So basically what they were doing is they were putting the Taliban into these containers and sealing them up, and they would die of suffocation. And, of course, we were providing these people with money to kill the Taliban. And, of course, men and women become accomplices in the evils they fail to oppose. This was a crime against humanity. It should be tried by the International Criminal Court. And, of course, there's no call for that at all. In fact, we've done everything we could to cover up the fact that we financed these murderers, who, after these people had already surrendered in the name of good faith, feeling that they were really, of course, surrendering to the United States, which was hiring these thugs, why we let them kill them. That, of course, is unconscionable, and we lose, of course, a whole generation of the young male youth of Afghanistan, and now everything over there is total chaos.
Yes, and by contrast, Dr. Condoleezza Rice attempted to villainize one of the pro-American heroes of the Mujahideen during the Afghan War, and then attempted to fight against the Taliban until he was imprisoned, and then he was able to escape, and his name was Ismail Khan, the current governor of Herat. Now, by contrast, his region
of Afghanistan is the only one that's stabilized. He does collect tariffs from cargo and materials coming in from neighboring Iran. Neighboring Iran to the west. And as a result, with that money, he has built up the economy and infrastructure of his area. So within his area, the infrastructure has been repaired and everything is normal. There's no looting. There's no disorder. The children are going back to schools. The people are very confident that they are secure. But this is the area that Condoleezza Rice wanted to focus upon as what should be destroyed by American forces because this person somehow was not conforming. Now, by coincidence, Herat is located in western Afghanistan where the proposed pipeline route is scheduled to pass through or pass nearby. And you begin to wonder if that was the reason why she decided to villainize Ismail Khan.
Right, and of course, where do we get off deciding who's going to be the governor there? You know, and if he has a stable and prosperous area of Afghanistan, that obviously is the only stable area. Everything else outside of Kabul is of course, chaotic, and that is simply because the communists control Kabul.
Yes. Well, I should say Kabul is not stable. There are barricades around the palaces and capital buildings where the Karzai regime is basically set up. But by contrast, Herat in western Pakistan is very stable.
In western Pakistan or western
Afghanistan? I'm sorry, in western Afghanistan. My second error of the evening so far. In western Afghanistan, within the region around Herat, which is currently being administered by Ismail Khan, the person who we would like to vilify.
Now, how do you spell his last name?
I believe it's K-H-A-N.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
And he rose to the rank of major when graduated from the military academy within Afghanistan when it was a free nation, rose to the rank of major. And in 1978, he was one of the brave warriors and leaders who fought effectively against the communists. Which were a formidable force at that time. And he was very pro-U.S., tried very hard to get some assistance from the United States, but every time, for some reason, they kept turning him down, and out of desperation, he did receive some help from neighboring Iran through the Tehran government. But he is Sunni and is very pro-Afghanistan, and he is not... in favor of supporting neighboring Iran because they are primarily Shia, he's Sunni. But he wants to be a good neighbor. He wants to get along. He is accepting some aid from neighboring Iraq. They're helping the...
Neighboring Iran.
Third mistake of the evening.
That's all right. I just want to make sure everybody gets the...
Yes.
Listen, I get mixed up all the time myself.
Yes, from neighboring Iran, they are providing road gangs that are helping to rebuild some of the highways, which is going to be very good for purposes of trade. In fact, that's the only section of highway throughout Afghanistan at this time that has been rebuilt and is functional. And I was a little concerned about that when I interviewed one of my Afghan friends, but he said... as far as he can tell, unlike the time when the Soviets built a very sturdy concrete highway leading from the former Soviet Union to Kabul for the intent of sending their tanks into Kabul, this he does not believe is a similar scenario. So I hope he's correct in his analysis of that situation. Maybe we should move... back to Iraq for just a moment, because there is one thing that I think is rather significant that we should not overlook.
All right, let's go back to Iraq.
We need to recall that approximately 6 months before 9/11, possibly sooner than that, there was a treaty of military cooperation between Tehran and Damascus. Now, it was not a strong pact, but they did sort of include Iraq in this as well.
And so Tehran and Damascus would be Iran, and Syria and Iraq is between, so...
Yes.
And there was a pact there, really, between them that I don't think most Americans were aware of.
But the reason I bring this to your attention and to the listening audience is that this military assistance agreement may be responsible in part for some of the skirmishes that are causing the deaths of and murders every day of American servicemen and women stationed in Iraq at this time. And the Bush administration has warned those governments just last week. And for that reason, Dr. Stan, I am more inclined to think that the next hot spots will be those neighboring nations.
All right. Well, of course, the question is, will we go after Syria and Lebanon, or will we go after Iran? I believe this is one reason why we're talking about sending more troops in, is we intend to go into those neighboring countries. It's just a matter of time. And, of course, but then, of course, we've got Korea there, and we can't let them develop their nuclear weapons. So what's going to happen? There are a lot of really uncertainties in this world today. And then, of course, behind that, I believe, is God. And as he looks upon America, that was once the apple of his eye and has now turned against him. I believe, of course, he may have a plan entirely different than that of the Bush administration.
I think you're right on that. In fact, I know you're right, Dr. Stan. It's very difficult to speculate regarding North Korea. I know that it's been hyped up in the news lately. I've heard all of the reports that you were alluding to a few minutes ago regarding bringing short-range missiles into position just on the DMZ area, and that our troops are being moved back to safer territory, supposedly. But please understand that Seoul, Korea, the largest primate city within South Korea and also its capital, are within range of those, well within range of those short-range missiles. So that is a concern that we need to address. In addition to the fact that North Korea now does have the capacity to deliver a nuclear warhead to a distance that would include the west coast here of the United States.
And of course they have that capacity because they got it from communist China because we gave it to them. What's wrong with this scenario? Well, go ahead.
Yeah, well, a part of the scenario is the sphere of influence of both Russia and China, two of our closest allies now, supposedly. But unfortunately...
Do you really think that there are allies? Or is
absolutely
that what we're supposed
not.
To think?
I say that facetiously. The previous president referred to Beijing as our strategic partner.
Right. Well, I just don't want a lightning bolt to come down out of the sky and hit you, John.
Yes. Well, we did have a very severe lightning storm yesterday. But in any case, we need to be aware that Beijing and Moscow still play a very strong sphere of influence, respectively, on North Korea. They will, Pyongyang, North Korea will more or less do what is advantageous provided they have the approval of the People's Republic of China and the Russian Federation.
I don't really think that's really so important. North Korea, I mean, they can't even feed their own people. They don't, they have hardly any electricity. People are just actually starving to death there. And, of course, you know, they're totally dependent upon communist China and communist Russia. And if we really put pressure on them, they would, of course, put down this upstart, this Kim Jong-il. But, of course, we're not doing that. And I don't know what this is all about, but they're obviously trying to focus our attention on this new hot spot. And why would Kim Jong-il say, oh, you know, now we have the ability to manufacture all of these nuclear weapons, and, of course, we have the capacity to hit you, and if you don't do what we want, we're going to attack the West Coast. Why would he be making these this sort of ridiculous statements unless, of course, he is simply an actor on the stage, and, of course, this is all being utilized to provoke either fear in us or perhaps a reaction from us. I don't know which it's going to be. What do you think, John?
Well, I think it's definitely designed to intimidate us so that hopefully he can wreak greater demands from us. And, of course, there are many American leaders who do not have courage and will be intimidated and will give in to his demands, I'm afraid. When in reality, even the madman that he supposedly is has enough sense and sanity to know that launching such a missile would be highly counterproductive to his grandeur of power. I have been wrong a few times in my life, and I could be wrong about this, but I believe that the hyping up of North Korea is being done for certain advantages, none of which are for our nation's security nor for our prestige throughout the world. And until we realize that we have to stand up to thugs such as the leader of North Korea, we will become a weaker nation.
But of course, we have been financing him. We've been giving him large amounts of food. We've been giving him, of course, electricity, oil for nothing to provide electricity, at least for the Royal Palace and the Army. Certainly, we have been building a nuclear power plant for them. In many respects, we've been keeping this thug in power as we have so many of the other communists in the name of humanitarian aid or some other excuse. I mean, this is the sort of thing we've done time and time and time again. We're still funneling billions of dollars into Russia under one guise or another, because, of course, without constant infusions of financial aid to Russia and to the economy, at least would have collapsed up till recently. Apparently, it's doing better now, but we've funneled, almost $300 billion. The West has $380 billion into communist China and created, of course, this powerhouse, this productive powerhouse, the best competitor our own money can buy. And it doesn't make sense unless there's another agenda behind what's going on.
Well, I think there possibly is an agenda behind what's going on, but the American people are not yet aware of it. I'm not so sure that you or I are either to any great extent, because this is something that is very secretive, and it's designed to stir up some type of reaction in Washington, officially or formally, and the powers that be will more or less decide whether or not there's going to be a larger scale war that will be costing the lives of many more fine American men and women, as well as our true allies, which of course are South Korea, Japan, and possibly Taiwan, within that vicinity. But we need to wake up about what is happening. Going back to China for just a moment, and also Central Asia, we need to also be aware that Dr. Condoleezza Rice was very instrumental in the current building of a pipeline leading from Kazakhstan to communist China. And within a matter of months, if not a year, this will be operational and provide the People's Republic of China with all of their military needs in terms of natural gas and petroleum for their military might.
Isn't that nice that we're doing that for our enemies? You have to ask yourself why.
Well, you're going to have to give Dr. Rice a great deal of the credit for her earlier negotiations with the Central Asian nations so that Chevron and other oil companies could construct that pipeline leading to Beijing and other points in China. It's unbelievable what is happening. And
now, I didn't know, is that pipeline just about completed or well on its way to being completed?
It's on its way to entering into China. I don't know how rapidly the construction is occurring within the People's Republic of China itself, but the greatest challenge has been building the pipeline across Kazakhstan, and it's being built through
a geographical area which it has very little resistance. There are there's not too much in the way of topography. It's mainly a series of plains, level areas. So it is north of the mountain ranges which we read so much about and see on the map. So it's very feasible that within 6 months to 8 months from now, it could be completed.
Well, do you know anything about the pipelines that they're building to the west that are coming out of the Caspian Sea, and then of course going into Turkey or going?
Yes.
What's happening there?
Well, that pipeline, as I understand, is fairly close to completion. The one going from Azerbaijan through Turkey is just about complete. But then there will be other routes leading from that pipeline across the Danube corridor, and that was one of the reasons why NATO decided to bomb Milosevic's Serbia and...
So the pipeline could go through Yugoslavia, right?
Yes, with very little resistance along the Danube corridor, parallel to the Danube River.
Well, I guess you better not then, if the oil companies want to build a pipeline, you better not say no, because we saw what happened to Afghanistan, we saw what happened to Yugoslavia, but we certainly wouldn't want to have that happen to another country.
Indeed not.
It's sort of like, you know, when you get an offer you can't refuse from the mafia, you better take it.
Yes, there's a lot of blood on the hands of all these oil cartels and multinational corporations.
But they're not the ones that are doing the bombing. It's the American soldiers, the American military. But then, of course, there's Major General Smedley Butler, who is one of the most widely decorated, highly decorated Marine officers, said, and he, back in the 1930s, war is a racket. And I've fought all over the world for American corporations.
Yes, and it's ironic that the general in charge of NATO at that time, an American general who some people believe was actually appointed to high position within the Arkansas National Guard by William Jefferson Clinton when he was governor, is now going to become a presidential candidate, Wesley Clark.
General Wesley Clark just happens to be a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, just happens to be a Rhodes Scholar.
Yes, and probably should be tried for the war crimes of the innocent thousands of civilians that were killed during the bombings of cosmopolitan Belgrade.
And of course, but of course, we are insisting that our men will not be subject to the ICC. However, of course, we're suggesting, of course, that everybody else be subjected to the International Criminal Court. But of course, one of these days, that's going to come to an end. And I fear for some of our military men who are really just doing what they're told to do without any realizing, of course, that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. A military man's told to kill, he kills. That's the purpose of a military. Their job is to kill people and break things and destroy things. But, of course, one day, either in this world or the next one, they'll have to stand before the bar of judgment.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there are times when this sort of thing is justified, but when we are aggressors in another country, is that justified? As corrupt as Milosevic was, people have forgotten. We financed him for many years and backed him, his communist regime.
Yes, we did. What concerns me is what you were addressing earlier in the program, and that is how much longer can we afford to call up more reserve units and National Guard units here in America?
Well, of course,
I think we're stretched pretty thin as it is.
Well, of course, the thing is, of course, is when you're in war, and this is a good place for people to go to get a job. And, of course, we're going to see more and more unemployment in this country. More and more people are going to be looking for a job. And maybe there'll be no other place to go but the military and just hope you survive. But, you know, they begin to pull up more reserve and National Guard units. Who is there going to be to defend America? Well, I suppose we could always pull in some Chinese troops, couldn't we?
In fact, there are such plans tentatively on the books right now, Dr. Stan, for foreign troops to be brought in to substitute for American troops and National Guards.
Because our troops are being sent all throughout the world. And we have troops between 120 and 140 nations throughout the world. And, of course, the last figure I saw was 136 nations. why are we doing this? Now we're talking about sending troops to Liberia, as terrible as that situation is, and as terrible as the situation is in Nigeria. Are we to be the policemen of the world? Why not send in mercenaries? Why not have a French Foreign Legion, an American Foreign Legion? But are we going to draft our, get our young American boys killed there when we're not sure who the good guys are and who the bad guys are?
Well, Liberia is such an example of who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. It's my understanding that the rebel forces are predominantly Islamic jihadists. And Taylor, as bad as he may be, wants at least some U.S. troops to come in to stabilize things before he leaves, because as bad of a corrupt leader as he supposedly is, according to Secretary Powell, he's concerned about the well-being of the people.
And he's coming from a Christian perspective. And, of course, this is, again, another example of this war between the Muslims and the Christians that took place in Nigeria. And those of you who haven't seen that wonderful movie, Tears in the Sun, with Bruce Willis, I don't like to recommend movies, but this is a must-see for everybody. And I remember when we saw this recently on DVD, I saw all these pictures, you know, of the slaughter fields there, and I thought, how did they ever get, boy, they must have spent a lot of money on these, you know, to come up with these very realistic-looking pictures, only recently to find that they weren't realistic-looking pictures. They were what really had happened there. They were newsreel shots that were taken in Nigeria when, of course, the Christians were being slaughtered by the Muslims, and never, never, never mentioned here in the United States. Let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. Regarding foreign troops being brought in to replace National Guard, where can I get some documentation on that?
Now, John, do you have any documentation on that?
Well, I think you can go to most of your regular news sources on that issue. We have a lot of National Guardsmen personnel over in Iraq and some of the neighboring nations right now. I'm talking about Kuwait and Bahrain and some of the other smaller nations along the Gulf there.
You're saying our National Guard is over there?
Yeah, we have our National Guard units that have mobilized. But a lot of this is covered in the Brahimi report, and you know, talking about how we will bring in troops. You know, we will sort of you know, have our police and our military all sort of merge into one big happy unit, and we can use troops from one country and another country. And that's the Brahimi report that came out of the Millennium Summit. Brahimi. I can't spell it. It's in our Millennium Syllabus. Millennium Summit Syllabus. Give me a call off the air and I'll get it for you, okay?
Well,
or at least I'll tell you how to spell it.
Yeah, we've been expecting this sort of thing for a long time,
right.
Without documentation or anything.
And if you heard that talk we had the other day with Joan Parrish, she went into a lot of that, and this is all planned.
Yeah. The thing about this is foreign troops will do things in a nation that nationals would never do to the populace.
Right, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's rather insidious.
All right, thanks so much, Frank. Bye-bye. Okay, we're out of time, John. It's been a fascinating hour, and hope we can get you back on here again sometime real soon. And we can continue this, because I think that people need to begin to look at what's going on and understand. Of course, there are a lot of questions that nobody wants to ask. None of the major commentators will ask, because as Dan Rather said on a British broadcasting program when he was over in England on BBC with Gregory Plast, if I ask the hard questions in America, why they'd necklace me. And so, of course, we gather the softballs, we never get the truth. Thank you, John Spring. A fascinating program, and until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, and I look forward to having you as a guest on my program soon.
Okay, look forward to it. And, of course, this is the time, of course, that we ask you to pray for America, understanding we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political and ideological battlefield. And, of course, remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, we'll be back again. Well, I guess no Thursday during this hour. May the Lord be with you.